Morning, everyone. Hope everyone got some sleep last night and are ready for some study this morning. This is a big topic, and it's a really, once you get into it, it's a really exciting topic. Before I start, though, I do have to say, as with every address I give, while I've tried very hard to establish the correct understanding of this topic, I must admit there's always a good possibility of making some mistakes, misunderstanding some parts of the topic. Like I said, there is an incredible amount of detail in the Passover feast. All the way from its beginning in Egypt, through the time in the wilderness, the judges in the land, the kings under the land, the reinstatement of it after wicked kings, all the way down to the time, the very day, actually, of Christ's crucifixion. And sorting through those details is challenging, to say the least, but it's a very exciting subject. And it's one that's continued to bring me back to it for several years now, studying it out and restudying it and challenging my former ideas of it. Fortunately, we should have time to look at the feast in some detail since we're covering it in two classes. But there's still some things that we won't be able to explore completely, and even some things I'm sure that we won't establish for sure. However, most of what we talk about today is easy to verify simply by comparing a few scriptures using basic math and logic. And I'd be happy to discuss any questions that you have after the second class. Usually a quick review of a few key passages holds the answer to any question on the topic. Now, the Passover was an ancient custom in Israel that was established by law and was the first of the Hebrew holidays to be given. It was a commemoration of their deliverance from slavery in Egypt. Now, while it's still observed by Jews today, the scriptures teach us that it was fulfilled in Christ's death. Christ was a fulfillment of the Passover. The simple fact that he fulfilled it means there must have been more to the Passover than looking back on their deliverance from Egypt. Why does it matter to us? If it was fulfilled in Christ, and if we're not to observe it today, why should we return to a study of it? Well, Paul makes an interesting statement in 1 Corinthians 5, verses 7 and 8. He says, "Cleanse out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you really are unleavened. For Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed." Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed. "Let us therefore celebrate the festival, not with the old leaven, the leaven of malice and evil, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." Thank you, Brother Lee, for bringing out the scriptural meaning of leaven as sin, which corresponds with this passage, 11 of malice and wickedness. And we'll have more on that this afternoon in the talk on the bread. Now, the bread and the wine is an ordinance which each follower of Christ is to partake in regularly, as we each know. Here, Paul refers to that feast as the Passover festival. He specifically refers to Christ as our Passover lamb. And the festival we share around him in partaking of the bread, he tied directly to the Passover festival. It is therefore quite fitting that we should take a look at the Passover, the depth of meaning in it, as we explore the meaning of the bread and the wine. Now, there's something else we learn from this statement of Paul's, though. The Passover was obviously about more than looking back to Israel's birth and deliverance from Egypt. If it were solely a day of historical remembrance, how could Christ have fulfilled the Passover? How could he be the true Passover? To fulfill something is to fill it up, figuratively. It's to take an outline and turn it into the full object. While the outline of an object can tell us a lot about the object, the full picture is much more. It fills full the outline. In the same way, Christ filled full what the Passover outlined. He was the complete embodiment of what the Passover outlined. While the Passover was to be a yearly reminder to Israel of their birth, it was also to be a yearly reminder to them of a coming deliverance, a more complete deliverance from oppression and death. It was to teach them about Christ. We read in Galatians 3, "But before faith came, we were kept under the law, shut up unto the faith which should afterwards be revealed. Wherefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, that we might be justified by faith. But after that faith has come, we are no longer under a schoolmaster." Paul is explaining that we are no longer under the law, including the feast associated with it. He explains this by calling the law, that is the law given through Moses, a schoolmaster or a teacher. A teacher bringing us to Christ. It was like a lesson book that was to teach Christ to the Israelites. While we're not now going through the physical exercises of that lesson book, it still teaches Christ. And therein lies its value. It has been preserved for over 3,000 years now as a teacher for us. Not one that we are under subjection to, but one that we may freely access for guidance. If this law was so valuable a schoolmaster to Israel for God to make it their national law, certainly it is an apt teacher to show us the principles of Christ's work. In the law, we can gain a view of Christ from a variety of angles. This gives us a solid foundation from which to appreciate who He is and what He has done for us. We read in Hebrews 10, verse 1, "For the law, having a shadow of good things to come and not the very image of the things, can never with those sacrifices which they offered year by year continually make the comers thereunto perfect." And down in verse 11, "And every priest standeth daily ministering and offering oftentimes the same sacrifices which can never take away sins. But this man, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down on the right hand of God." Paul, again, is telling us in the letter to the Hebrews that the law gives an outline of Christ's sacrifice. He calls it a shadow as opposed to an actual image. What is a shadow? A shadow is an outline from a certain angle, right? From an object's shadow, we can learn a lot. A person can generally be distinguished from an animal or a tree by their shadow. Many times we can even learn the gender and some of the general features of a person based on their shadow. Some of you may recognize whose shadow this is. We may even notice things in a shadow that we hadn't before noticed when we saw that person in the light, just because we were distracted by the other details of their figure. The more different shadows of a person we see, the more we learn about the person. Such with the shadows under the law, as Lee showed last night. For instance, Paul says here that the sacrifices were offered many times, and we might also add that there were many different sacrifices offered. The Passover sacrifices, the weekly, monthly, and yearly sacrifices, the burnt offering, the peace offering, the sin offering, the trespass offering, offerings for uncleanness, etc., etc. These sacrifices each were a shadow. They were a different shadow, a shadow from a different angle of the same thing. They each give us a glimpse of Christ's sacrifice which would come after them. There was only one sacrifice that fulfilled each of these shadows. Only one embodiment of them. But like a person may cast several shadows that each give an outline of the person, Christ's victory is shown by many different sacrifices that each give an outline of one event. So filling full of that outline, again, we get a fuller picture. But there are details that we can learn just by looking at the shadow. When we look at Christ, we will see the perfect fulfillment of that shadow. So the value of studying and understanding the Passover is that it shows us Christ. It showed Israel what Christ was coming to do, and it shows us what He has done. It is a teacher that we might know Christ. We read in John 17 the importance of knowing Christ. "This is life eternal, that they might know Thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom Thou hast sent." Knowing Christ is a matter of life and death. It only makes sense to use every tool we have offered us to learn about Him. Not only should we be motivated by the life or death seriousness of knowing Him, but we should adore Him for what He has done for us, for what He embodies. How can we say we adore a person and not want to know who they are and what they've done for us? So Deuteronomy 16, which was read this morning. Thank you, Brother Ross. It covers the Feast of the Lord, specifically the Passover and Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, the first two of these three we'll be looking at, the Passover and the associated Feast of Unleavened Bread. If you want to turn up to Deuteronomy 16, we'll be going through a few of this verse by verse, not all of it. Verse 1, observe the month of Abib. Observe the month of Abib. Abib was the first month of the Jewish year, the month in which God told them through Moses that he would deliver them on the night of the original Passover. The middle of the month, Abib, was when the Passover took place. Now, Strong's tells us that the word Abib is from a root meaning to be tender. Abib means green, that is, a young ear of grain. Tender, as we know, means soft, easily impressed, broken, bruised, or injured, as tender plants or tender flesh or tender grapes. It can also mean weak or feeble, as tender age, used in Genesis 33. Proverb 9 uses it to mean young and carefully educated. Young and carefully educated. Israel was to remember the time when he was tender and weak, just being born as a nation, but carefully educated by God in his kindness. Hosea 11 tells us, when Israel was a child, then I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. Tender also means susceptible of the softer passions, as love, compassion, kindness, compassionate, pitiful, easily affected by the distress of another or anxious for another's good. Tender-hearted. Also means compassionate, easily excited to pity, forgiveness, or favor. James tells us, the Lord is pitiful and of tender mercy. Now the first occurrence of this word Abib, the name of their first month, in the scriptures is actually in the plague of hail brought on Egypt. It says, Moses stretched forth his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire ran along the ground. And the Lord rained hail upon the land of Egypt. So there was hail, and fire mingled with the hail, very grievous, such as there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail smote throughout all the land of Egypt all that was in the field, both man and beast. And the hail smote every herb of the field, and brake every tree of the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, was there no hail. And the flax and the barley were smitten, for the barley was in the ear. That word in the ear is abib. The barley was tender. And the flax was bald, but the wheat and rye were not smitten, for they were not grown up. So we find that the first instance of this word is in God smiting the tenderness of Egypt. But it says in the same passage, he protected Israel. There was no hail in the land of Israel. It was after the plagues were poured out on Egypt, all of them except for the Passover itself, that we read, the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. So when we read in Deuteronomy 16, observe the month Abib, we're reading that Israel was to remember its birth. The time when it was young and tender, as a young head of grain, and God was tender towards them and brought them out gently to make them his nation. Now, before we go much further, I want to get a good grasp on the Jewish calendar. So spend a little bit of time doing this. I've got about three pages of document here that we want to go through. And we'll look at several aspects of the calendar, from the days to the way that they counted their hours, to months and years. And this will be really important as we look at the Passover, because if we want to understand how the Passover was celebrated and how it applied to the last week of Christ's life, then we need to understand how the Bible talks about days and hours, etc. So the first point I want to make is that the calendar days start at sundown. Calendar day in the Jewish reckoning starts at sundown. Ours start at midnight, right? Midnight, the calendar day turns over. For them, it was sundown. That's a tough point to wrap your head around. You know, we, even with our system, we get confused. You know, if somebody comes in, you know, a flight comes in at 1 a.m. And you wake up the next morning and somebody says, you get in yesterday? You say, yeah, I got in yesterday. Well, no, it was actually today, but it was really early this morning. It was like right after it became the day, right? You get the idea. The calendar days get confused there around that day. So even ours is confusing. In the Hebrew system, the transition actually happened during what we think of as the most eventful part of the day, in the evening. Sun's going down right about the time you're having supper. That's when the date changed. Okay. The turning over of a day was a significant event for them, much more so than in our society. Deadlines and dates were determined by the setting of the sun. Remember in Genesis chapter 1 when God says the evening and the morning were the first day and the evening and the morning were the second day, etc.? Why does he say evening before morning? Well, because the day started at evening. It started at the sundown. Sundown and sunup were the two significant events of that day. Also in Deuteronomy 23, we have an example of this. If there be among you any man that is not clean by reason of uncleanness, that chanceth him by night, then shall he go abroad out of the camp. He shall not come within the camp, but it shall be when the evening cometh, that's when sundown comes, he shall wash himself with water, and when the sun is down, he shall come into the camp again. So if he was unclean until the changing of the day, he was unclean until sundown. Okay? So if I'm unclean today, I'll be unclean until the going down of the sun, because that starts tomorrow. Starts tomorrow in the Hebrew calendar. Several other instances of this, Leviticus 11, chapter 14, chapter 15, chapter 17, chapter 22, there's lots of examples. They say basically the same thing. For these ye shall be unclean. Whosoever toucheth the carcass of them shall be unclean until the evening. It's another way of saying he'll be unclean for the rest of today. So try to keep that in your mind. It takes a little while to wrap your head around it, but day starts, the day ends, and the next day starts at sundown. Also, time, you know, we base our time on how many hours it's been since midnight. Like right now, we would say, what is it, about 9:30? It's 9:30. It's been 9 hours and 30 minutes since midnight, right? And in the afternoon, we would base on how long it's been since noon. Okay, so if it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's been 3 hours since high noon. The Jews' reckoning, though, the hours of their day began with sunrise. And so we would say right now is the third hour. It's been 3 hours since sunup. Okay? And the hours of the night, we would count back from sunset, which makes sense because that's when the day or the night started. Okay? So if it was midnight, we might say it's the sixth hour of the night, the fifth hour of the night. Okay? So the third hour of the day is 3 hours after sunup. The sixth hour of the night would be 6 hours since sundown. Well, this may seem a little strange at first. It actually makes a little more sense than our own clock, because who knows exactly when high noon is unless you have a watch. It's easy to count from sunrise because everyone sees that event. Of course, we call in the morning, we call it a.m. In the afternoon, we call it p.m. They would just say it's the third hour of the day or the third hour of the night. They don't need that a.m. and p.m. So once you're used to it, it would actually make more sense than starting the hour count over in the middle of the day and the hour count over again in the middle of the night. All right, how about days of the week? The Sabbath day was actually the only day of the week with a name. The days of the week were simply signified by a number. That is, it's the first day of the week, or it's the third day of the week, or the fifth day. And that's how many days it's been since the last Sabbath. So if we said it's the first day of the week, it's the first day since Sabbath. If it was Sunday, we'd say it's the first day of the week. Today's Saturdays, we'd say it's the sixth day of the seventh day of the week, or the Sabbath day. Tomorrow, we'll say it's the first day since the Sabbath day. The weekly or regular Sabbath always occurred on the seventh day of the week. It was the foundation of the whole week, as the rest of the week was based on how long it had been since Sabbath. The Sabbath began, and note this, the Sabbath began Friday at sundown, and it ran until Saturday at sundown. Okay, remember, because the day begins at sundown. So Friday night, and you'll see this if you're in cities that have Jewish synagogues. Friday night, all activity stops. They're in their homes, okay, by sundown. Saturday, you don't see them all day. And Saturday night, here they come out again. The sun's gone down. Saturday is over. It's Sunday to them, okay? Hebrew months. Hebrew months were lunar. That means they're determined by the moon phase. So we just start ours over after 30 days or 31 days, depending on the month, sometimes 28 or 29. But we have a set number of days in our month. For the Hebrews, it was when you saw the first sliver of the new moon. Okay, so they would watch the moon each night, and the month would start with the first sliver of moon you could see after a no moon night, and it would end with new moon or no. That's when you don't see a moon at all. It'd be the end of the month, and then start the next month as soon as they see the first sliver of the new moon. Our months, of course, are not lunar. And that's why we have exactly 12 months in a year. If we had lunar months, it wouldn't be exactly 12 months in a year. So they'd have to make an adjustment from time to time to correct for their 12 months not coming out to exactly 360 days in the year. So they had a small month that they would add every few years and made up for that. Hebrew years. Hebrew years began at different times. I know that sounds really confusing, but the ceremonial year starts at the beginning of the first month. That's the beginning of Abib, what we've been talking about, the month of the Passover. But the civil year actually started later. This isn't as confusing as it sounds, though. It's like us celebrating New Year's Day on January 1st, but nothing really starts over on January 1st, does it? School starts in August. So we say, you know, that was my sophomore year of high school. Well, your sophomore year of high school didn't start January 1st. But we get used to it, right? It's just that we're talking about school year or we're talking about the civil year. The Jews had the same thing. They had their ceremonial year and they also had their civil year. The ceremonial year started the month that Israel came out of Egypt. That was the beginning of their national existence. That was their national birth. So that was the first month for them. Now, Hebrew years. We move on to years. The years were counted by, guess, Sabbath years. Just like the week starts with the Sabbath and ends with the Sabbath, the year started with a Sabbath year and ended with a Sabbath year too. Every seventh year was a Sabbath year. And in the Sabbath year, the land would rest from farming and the food from the past year would be eaten until the harvest of the next year, which would be the first year. Hebrew slaves were all set free on the seventh year. You read about that in Exodus 23 and Leviticus 25. 6 years you shall sow your land, but the seventh, you shall let it rest and lie still, that the poor of thy people may eat. Also, if thy brother, a Hebrew man or Hebrew woman, be sold unto thee and serve thee 6 years, then in the seventh year thou shalt let him go free from thee. So what happened after 7 years? You just started over back at one, right? It'd be pretty hard to keep track of how many Sabbaths it's been since you were born or since, you know, the last king or something like that. Well, they grouped the Sabbath years into jubilees. So you had a Sabbath year every seventh year. Then after you had seven of those, 7 times 7 is 49, right? So after you've had 7 Sabbath years, you have 49 years. The next year is the 50th year. They call it a jubilee. Okay, and a jubilee was a very special year. All the land that you'd bought went back to its original owner. And if you had land and someone had bought it from you, you got that land back. Okay, so it was kind of a reset button every 50th year. Read about that in Leviticus 25. You shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and you shall return every man to his possession, and you shall return every man unto his family. The last thing we want to talk about, and this will be really important as we look at the Passover. Not all Sabbaths were regular Sabbaths. Not all Sabbaths were regular Sabbaths. The Sabbath means intermission. It's from the word meaning repose. Each seventh day of the week commemorated God's intermission or repose from creating on the seventh day. Therefore, it was appropriately called the Lord's Sabbath. The seventh day of the week is called the Lord's Sabbath. It was the regular Sabbath or the weekly Sabbath. Okay? There was another type of Sabbath that didn't always fall on the seventh day of the week. The feasts under the law of Moses, including the Passover, were what the King James Version calls holy convocations. If you recognize that phrase, the holy convocations. These holy convocations had special considerations, but many of them restricted work. Just as in the regular weekly Sabbath, or the Lord's Sabbath, no work was to be performed on certain holy convocation days, except that directly connected with the feast of that day. Because of this, they may sometimes be referred to as a Sabbath, or a rest, such as the Passover Sabbath, or the rest associated with the Passover. These might fall on any day of the week. Now and then they would fall on the seventh day of the week and overlap with the regular Sabbath, or Sabbath of the Lord, but not always. Usually they fell on a different day of the week. So keep that in mind. Concerning, we read about this in Leviticus 23, I believe it is. Yep, that's where I'm reading from. I'll go ahead and read a lot of this. If you want to follow along, you can, but I will skip a few verses. Leviticus 23 says, concerning the feast of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh is a Sabbath of rest, a holy convocation. So notice, it says the seventh day of the week is a holy convocation, We know that's the regular Sabbath, right? You shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Because it commemorated the Lord's rest or Sabbath. These are the feasts of the Lord, even holy convocations, which ye shall proclaim in their seasons. So now he's talking about different holy convocations, the feasts, the celebrated feasts during different times of the year. In the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread unto the Lord. 7 days ye must eat unleavened bread. In the first day ye shall have an holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work therein. So the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread was a holy convocation in which no work was to be done. But you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord 7 days. In the seventh day is a holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work therein. So the Feast of Unleavened Bread had two Sabbaths associated with it that were not the Lord's Sabbath or the Sabbath of the seventh day. They were special Sabbaths. Reading on, and you shall eat neither bread, nor parched corn, nor green ears, until the selfsame day that you have brought an offering unto your Lord. It shall be a statute for you forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings. And you shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. Even unto the morrow after the 7 Sabbaths shall you number 50 days. And you shall proclaim on the selfsame day that it may be an holy convocation unto you. This is Pentecost, the Feast of Pentecost, or the 50th. It's after, or also, it's also called the Feast of Weeks. So after 49 days after they started their harvest, they had this Pentecost feast. It was a holy convocation. This one actually fell on Sunday because it tells us it was the day after the seventh Sabbath. So the day after a Sabbath would be a Sunday, right? It was a holy convocation where they did no work. Also, it tells us, in the seventh month, in the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing trumpets, a holy convocation, the day of blowing of trumpets. It was called a Sabbath because it was a day of rest. It didn't fall on Saturday. You shall do no servile work therein, but you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. Also, on the 10th day of the seventh month, there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be a holy convocation. And you shall afflict your souls an offering made by fire unto the Lord. You shall do no work in that same day, for it is a day of atonement, to make an atonement for you before the Lord your God. For whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted in that same day, he shall be cut off from among his people. And whatsoever soul it be that doeth any work that same day, that soul will I destroy from among his people. You shall do no manner of work. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. It shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest. It's the day of atonement. And you shall afflict your souls. In the ninth of the month, now notice this, in the ninth of the month at even, from even unto even, shall ye celebrate your Sabbath. So saying, start sundown the ninth of the month, from sundown to sundown the next day, shall ye celebrate your Sabbath, the day of atonement. So remember, the day started and ended at sundown. So when he says sundown on the ninth, that's the beginning of the tenth day, and it will run all the way till sundown the tenth, which is the end of the tenth day. That was a special Sabbath called the Day of Atonement. These are the feasts of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord, a burnt offering and a meat offering, a sacrifice and drink offerings, everything upon his day, beside the Sabbaths of the Lord, and beside your gifts and beside all your vows and beside your freewill offerings, which ye give unto the Lord. Also in the 15th day of the seventh month, when ye have gathered the fruit of the land, ye shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day shall be a Sabbath. You shall take unto you the first day the boughs of goodly trees, and branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and the willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. And you shall keep it a feast unto your Lord 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths 7 days. So this is the Feast of Tabernacles he's speaking of. It refers to it as well as a Sabbath. Okay, so I hope we've got the idea that there's the regular weekly Sabbath, and then special holidays where no work was done, that was called a Sabbath as well. So, you know, if we tried to put it in terms of our own holidays, we might say Thanksgiving Day is a day where all the banks are closed. You know, traditionally, no one, I say no one with a big explanation or big asterisk on it, no one goes to work that day, right? So it would be called the Thanksgiving Sabbath because it's a day we stay home, we rest from work. Hopefully most of us do at least get to do that. Okay, so hopefully that gives you a good idea of how the Jewish calendar works. Keep those things in mind. Especially keep in mind there was the regular weekly Sabbath called the Lord's Sabbath because it was the day the Lord rested. There was also the Sabbath associated with certain feasts. It was a day of rest associated with that feast. And also keep in mind that sunset starts a day. I'm going to keep saying that because it's hard to get it into your head. It was really hard for me to get into my head. Sunset starts the day and it ends the day. Okay. In remembrance of their deliverance from bondage, they were to keep the Passover. Exodus 12, if you'll turn with me. Let's look up Exodus 12. Moses is given the ordinance of the Passover there. Everyone got it? I'm going to go ahead and read this whole chapter, I think. Well, maybe not all of it. We'll read the part relevant. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. Speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, In the tenth day of this month, they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for a house. This is all talking about the Passover. And if the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it according to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You shall take it out from the sheep or from the goats. It was a first year, 1 year old sheep or goat. And you shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month. 14th day. They get it on the 10th. They keep it until the 14th day, and on the 14th, the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. At this point, I want to pause. Let's take a look at the margin. You see the marginal note in verse 6? It refers to that phrase, in the evening, and it says the Hebrew means between the two evenings. Anybody got an idea what that means, between the two evenings? Remember when the day started? When the day ended, it ended with a sunset, it began with a sunset. So when he says, kill it between the two evenings, kill it within the 24 hours that we call the 14th of Abib. Okay, it'd be like us saying midnight to midnight. Kill it between midnight, December 31st and midnight, January 1st. Kill it on New Year's Day. Right? Okay, so they shall kill it between the two evenings. Now, the reason I point that out is because that's actually the Hebrew phrase that's used everywhere. It talks about the Passover, and you see the phrase in the evening. Okay, so it's not just here. And they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts and on the upper door posts of the houses wherein they shall eat it. And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Eat not of it raw, nor sodden at all with water, but roast with fire. His head with his legs and with the pertinence thereof. So the whole thing, roast it whole over the fire. And ye shall let nothing of it remain until the morning. And that which remaineth of it until the morning, ye shall burn with fire. And thus shall ye eat it. So he's going to tell us how did they eat it. They ate it with their loins girded, so they would wear these loose robes. And when they needed to work or run, they would tie it up around themselves with a girdle. And that's what it meant to be girded. So you have your loins girded, you gather that up. You tighten it around your body so that you can work or you can fight or you can run. Okay? So he says, eat it with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt this night and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the houses where ye are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. And this day shall be unto you for a memorial, and ye shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. Ye shall keep it a feast by an ordinance forever. 7 days shall ye eat unleavened bread. Even the first day ye shall put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eateth leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel. This is talking about the Feast of Unleavened Bread, but it starts with the Passover. And in the first day there shall be an holy convocation, And in the seventh day there shall be an holy convocation to you. No manner of work shall be done in them, save that which every man must eat, that only may be done of you. And you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for in the selfsame day have I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall ye observe this day in your generation by an ordinance forever. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at even, ye shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 and 20th day of the month at even. 7 days shall there be no leaven found in your houses, for whosoever eateth that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in Israel. Ye shall eat nothing leavened. In all your habitations shall ye eat unleavened bread. So Moses calls for the elders of Israel, and he says to them, draw out and take you a lamb according to your families, and kill the Passover. And take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel. I had a question about that yesterday. I don't know where Joey is, but the lintel. Strike the lintel and the doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. And none of you shall go out at the door of his house until the morning. For the Lord will pass through to smite the Egyptians. And when he seeth the blood upon the lintel and on the two side posts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come in unto your house to smite you. And ye shall observe this thing for an ordinance to thee and to thy sons forever. And skipping down to 26. And it shall come to pass when your children shall say unto you, what mean ye by this service? That ye shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses. And the people bowed their head and worshiped God. So it goes on to describe that that night the destroyer did come. At midnight the Lord smote all the firstborn of the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne, unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle as well. And that's when Pharaoh rises in the night, calls for Moses and Aaron, and says, get out. Take your flocks, your herds, take everything you own, and get out. We don't want you here anymore. The Egyptians were urgent upon the people that they might send them out of the land in haste. For they said, we be all dead men. And they saw the power of that angel come into their houses in the middle of the night and kill the strength of their home. Every one of them in Egypt, they realized they were all dead men before God. And so the children of Israel took their dough before it was leavened, unleavened dough, and they bound it up in their clothes and their shoulders, and they borrowed from the Egyptians jewels and valuables, so much that they spoiled the Egyptians. And then it says the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 on foot that were men, besides children, and a mixed multitude went up with them also, the strangers that joined them. It goes on to say in verse 40, now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. 430 years of sojourning. That would be from the time of Abraham to the time that they came out. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day, it came to pass that all the host of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. And so it was observed in the Passover. All right, I think we'll leave it at that for now, although the rest of the chapter is relevant as well. We don't have too much time to go through a lot of more of it. So let's look back now. Verse 3. Take a lamb of the first year without blemish and pin it up on the 10th of the month. This lamb could be either a goat or a sheep, and it was to be kept until the 14th day. You'll hopefully remember that the Jewish day began and ended at sunset. So the phrase between the two evenings signifies the 24 hours counted to that day. To confirm this idea, let's take a look at Leviticus 23, verse 32. It's not speaking of the Passover here, but instead of the special Sabbath associated with the Day of Atonement, which took place on the 10th day of the month. He says, it shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest, and you shall afflict your souls in the ninth day of the month at even, from even unto even, so you celebrate your Sabbath. The 10th day they were not supposed to work in, but when did that 10th day start? It started at sundown, closing the ninth day. It was from sundown of the ninth for 24 hours until sundown of the 10th. That was reckoned as the day of the 10th. So with the Passover slide. So with the Passover law. It was to be killed in the 24 hours belonging to the 14th of Abib. So hopefully y'all can all see this.
This is a calendar. It has the night and the day of each calendar date on it. For us, it would look a little different than this. The 14 would be here, and our day divisions would be here. But in Jewish law, it's transferred to the sundown. So the 14th started at sundown, and it ended at sundown. Okay, so this was the night of the 14th. It came before the 14th, and that was the day of the 14th. Okay? The whole thing was known as the calendar day of the 14th. Just like we would say Tuesday, you know, for us, starts here and runs to here. We'd say that's all Tuesday, although the day of Tuesday is just the light portion of it. For them, the 14th started here and ended here, although they would say it was the day and the night of the 14th.
Okay? Another thing that's a little bit confusing when you're used to our calendar system, when we say Friday night, we mean the night after Friday. When they said, if they said the night of the 14th, it would actually be the night that preceded the day, the daytime of the 14th. Okay, because that sundown started the day. Okay. So the Passover was to be killed in the 24 hours belonging to the 14th of Abib. To put it in the same wording as the Atonement Sabbath, from the 13th day of the month at even, from even unto even, shall ye kill the Passover. Do you see that? Sundown on the 13th begins the 14th. From there until the next evening is when they were to kill the Passover. So the marginal note makes good sense. Kill it between the two evenings. That is, within the 24 hours of the 14th day. You can find this phrase in the evening in several different passages related to the Passover. As I said, in each place it means between the two evenings. So within the 14th day of the month Abib, the young sheep or goat selected for a specific family of the Hebrew slaves and their neighbors if they were a small household was killed. The blood was painted on the doorpost, top and sides of the house where they would eat it. They ate it in that night, whole roasted with unleavened bread, which they would eat for the next 7 days, and bitter herbs. There were no leftovers the next morning, for anything remaining was burnt. And they ate it in a rush, with their shoes on, their loins girded, and staff in hand. And none were to leave the house in which they ate it until morning. Now keep in mind, some of these ordinances were somewhat specific to the first Passover, or the remembrances thereof in the wilderness. Things changed a little bit when they got into the land. Now you'll remember that the Hebrew month began with the new moon. That is, just after the moon was completely black. The night the firstborn were smitten was the night beginning the 15th. It was exactly mid-month. It was therefore a full moon. It's halfway between two new moons. It's a full moon. At midnight, the chorus of desperate screams rattled every house in Egypt. God had smitten Egypt and redeemed Israel. Pharaoh begs Moses and Aaron to leave immediately and give him their blessing. It was under that same full moon, the 15th of Abib, that Israel was born a nation and started a journey out of Egypt and to the Promised Land, burdened with gifts from the frightened and wailing Egyptians whom they spoiled. The 15th, that is, the day which began at sundown after sacrificing the Passover, and continued through the night of the slain firstborn and through the morrow, was the day the Israelites left Egypt. And they departed from Ramses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month. On the morrow after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with an high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians, for the Egyptians buried all their firstborn, which the Lord had smitten among them. Upon their gods also the Lord executed judgments. And the children of Israel removed from Ramses and pitched in Succoth. This all happened the 15th day of the month. Now, just a minute. God said in Exodus 12:16 that immediately following the 14th, the Feast of Unleavened Bread began. And that the first day of that feast was to be a holy convocation. No manner of work shall be done but to eat. That's the 15th. But if my Bible maps are correct, they took everything they had and they traveled a full 20 miles to Succoth on that day as the Egyptians performed a funeral or two per family. What exactly were they supposed to be doing on the 15th day? Nothing? Sitting in Egypt still? It was the Passover Sabbath. No, the 15th day was a day specially for travel. It was free from work because it was dedicated solely to travel. In the first Passover, they were traveling from Egypt. In the latter ones, they were returning home from Jerusalem. Deuteronomy 16, which Ross read, contains the answer. It says in verse 6 through 8, "But at the place which the Lord thy God shall choose to place his name in, there thou shalt sacrifice the Passover at even," or between the evenings, "at the going down of the sun, at the season that thou camest forth out of Egypt. And thou shalt roast and eat it in the place which the Lord thy God shall choose. And thou shalt turn in the morning and go unto thy tents. 6 days thou shalt eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day shall be a solemn assembly to the Lord thy God. Thou shalt do no work therein." So this Feast of Unleavened Bread started with their travel back home from Jerusalem in subsequent years. And in this one, it started with their leaving Egypt. So it was a day that they were supposed to do no servile work in, but that's because it was specifically dedicated to travel. It was to remind them of their leaving of Egypt. All of Israel, once they entered the land, were to sacrifice the Passover in Jerusalem alone. As a matter of fact, it was probably killed at the temple. The next morning was dedicated to traveling back home, where the rest of the Feast of Unleavened Bread took place. Let's pause here and consider the Feast of Unleavened Bread specifically. It's spoken of as 8 days in Exodus 12, the 14th through the 21st, inclusively. There's the rest of that animation. Okay, this is the feast, the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It's spoken of as 8 days in Exodus 12. It's the 14th through the 21st. If you count that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's 8 days if you include the Passover. In Leviticus 23, though, it speaks of it as 7 days. It speaks of it as beginning the 15th day and ending the 21st. So that's 7 days. You just count 15th through the 21st, that's 7 days. And it's called 6 days, actually, in Deuteronomy 16, verse 8. That sounds kind of confusing at first, but once we take a closer look, it makes perfect sense. First, when was leavened bread forbidden? Anyone remember from our readings? When was leavened bread forbidden? Started with the Passover. Passover. Don't eat leavened bread with the Passover. Okay? So our Feast of Unleavened Bread started with where you see the 14th there, the P. We can count that because that's when leavened bread was forbidden. On the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread unto the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. In the 15th day of the month is the feast. 7 days shall unleavened bread be eaten. That's from Numbers 28. Exodus 12, it says, "In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at even, ye shall eat unleavened bread." So they started on the 14th at even when they killed the Passover lamb. They started eating unleavened bread, and they would continue that all the way until the 21st. So don't get confused by the fact that sometimes it calls it 6, sometimes it calls it 7, sometimes it calls it 8. It's simply that the Passover was the day that they started eating unleavened bread. It was called the Passover specifically, not the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The 15th was a holy convocation in which they traveled home. And then the 16th to the 21st, they were at home. They didn't eat leavened bread either. So really, it was 8 days of not eating leavened bread. But part of it we call the Feast of the Passover. Part of it we call the holy convocation of the 15th. And part of it we would call just the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Clear as mud? Okay. Now remember that these Sabbaths that I'm talking about here, the 15th and the 21st, they're holy convocations, they're the Sabbaths of the Unleavened Bread Week. They did not fall on a regular weekly Sabbath. And if you need some convincing of that, think of the 15th as being on a Sabbath, on a regular weekly Sabbath. If the 15th fell on, the 21st didn't. It was the first and seventh day, so they were never both on a weekly Sabbath. It just, depending on the calendar year, just like your birthday is on a different day of the week every year, they would fall on a different day of the week every year as well. Now, if we consider this situation, it'd be unique because this is a double Sabbath, or it's a Sabbath doubly because it's the holy convocation, but it's also a Sabbath because it's Saturday. It's the regular weekly Sabbath, right? The next week, we would have a Sabbath to end the week of unleavened bread. The next day would be our regular weekly Sabbath. So we would have a double Sabbath, and since we have 2 days back-to-back, 48 hours, where no work could be done. It's kind of an interesting situation. And when they prepared for that day, they needed to prepare actually for 48 hours of not doing any work, which is substantial when you don't have a microwave and a refrigerator in your house, and you know you don't have auto feeders for all your livestock. Okay, let's see where I'm at here. Which leads us to another point. There was a day called the preparation. You may remember that from Christ's crucifixion. We read, and now when even was come, because it was the preparation, that is the day before the Sabbath. We also read Luke 23, and that day was the preparation, and the Sabbath drew on. However, John 19 gives us the most insight. It says, the Jews therefore, because it was the preparation, that the body should not remain upon the cross on the Sabbath day, for that Sabbath day was an high day, besought Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. So the day before the Sabbath was called the preparation. However, notice that this was not just a regular Sabbath. It was a high day. That is, it was a holy convocation. So it was the Passover Sabbath. It was the 15th. Okay? So the day before the 15th was called the preparation. There was lots to be done on that day. The preparation was the day they had to do. Sorry, what was that preparation that they had to do before the holy day of the 15th? Well, the 15th would begin a week without leaven. Does everyone know what leaven is? It's yeast. It's what you use to make your bread rise. If you don't use yeast, they look like kind of like tortillas, although tortillas use yeast too. But we'll have some this afternoon. I think Jessica's going to make some and we'll have a chance to try some. But it's very thick bread. It's not like croissant. It's not something that you would eat for breakfast, you know, when you have company over. It's called the bread of affliction in another place. Okay, so but that leaven, you know, we just buy our bread, it's already got leaven in it. But when it says there's no leaven to be found in your houses, if you had a slice of bread in the back of your cabinet, it has leaven in it. God is saying you need to get everything that has leaven in it out of your houses. And it wasn't just out of their houses. Once they got on the land, it says, no leaven in any of your coasts. There was to be not a breadcrumb found in all of Israel. Okay? Only unleavened bread. So what do you think they were doing the day before? Spring cleaning. It's spring cleaning. Okay? The day, and that's the day of the Passover. The same day they killed the Passover, they had to clean all the leaven out of their houses. So now do you know why it's called the day of preparation? They're preparing for a week of no leaven. And they're cleaning their houses in preparation for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Okay, so that's what the preparation is all about. That's why it says it was the preparation before the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day. It was a special day. It was the Holy Convocation of the 15th. Quill, we'll go ahead and stop here just a little bit. Let's see if this is a good spot to stop. Yeah, let's take a little breather and we'll review what we've talked about so far and then we'll pause and pick this up in the next talk. We looked at the Hebrew calendar system and the time system. Remember, the calendar days started and ended at sundown. Hours were counted from sunset and then from sunrise. Days in the month were counted since the last... days of the week were counted since the last Sabbath. Seventh and last day of the week. So we have names for all our days of the week. They just counted how many days it's been since the last Sabbath. Years were counted in seven-year increments, each seventh being a Sabbath year. And after 49 years, which was seven Sabbath years, was a Jubilee. The biggest point to remember here, again, and to wrap your head around, is that the day began at sundown. It's hard to remember and to keep straight, but it's important if we're going to make any sense of the Passover feast and ultimately of Christ's Last Supper and death, which is the focus of this weekend and of our memorials every Sunday. Why is it important? Well, the bread and the wine that Christ broke with his disciples was at the Passover meal. When he took that unleavened bread and passed it to his disciples, it was the unleavened bread of the Passover meal. The Last Supper, that meal that he asked us to commemorate in the bread and the wine from then till now, was part of the Passover. If we understand the Passover, then we can understand the whole basis for the ordinance of the bread and the wine. Now, we'll establish all this in the next class and look at it more, but I want you to realize that this Passover is directly tied to the Last Supper and therefore to our memorials. So at this point, I think we've got a pretty good understanding of how the Passover feast worked, I hope at least. It started at sundown of the 13th and ran to sundown of the 14th, that is the whole of the 14th day of the first month. And it kicked off the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which ran a full 7 days from the 15th to the 21st of Abib, including 2 holy days or special Sabbaths. Okay, so we'll pause there and we'll pick up in half an hour or so.